You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McKusick, and it's time for Camp Notes, actually OTA notes from 6-9, June 9th, this Monday. Start with the absentees, because there were a number of them this day, and it changes the nature when the first one on the list is not there. That was Lamar Jackson. It's recent news that the Ravens are out of $750,000 of bonus they have to pay Jackson because he didn't make the minimum number of practices. Now, one of the things about this that's interesting is that pays for a rookie player for the entire season, basically. So if you have a spot you need to fill due to injury or whatnot, I mean, that is not an insignificant amount of money. That said, I think the Ravens really might prefer that he be there for the bulk, if not all, practices, because it just changes the nature of who shows up. And I think a lot of people are asking the question around their group chats that they have by position group, you know, is Lamar going to be there? Is Lamar going to be there? And then they make their decision based on that. But anyway, you'll listen to this long list of vets and realize that, you know, a lot of them are probably taking their cue from Jackson. The next one was Patrick Ricard. Again, this is a Monday after a 2-day weekend. I know they do have a 4-day week coming up here, but you'd think if a player wants to take a day to get right physically, they might take it in the middle of this week, not at the beginning, not necessarily at the end either, but they might take it in the middle. Anyway, Patrick Ricard missing. Zay Flowers was not there. DeAndre Hopkins, not there. Ronnie Stanley was absent. Emory Jones, now he's typically been at practice or he's been around the building. He probably still is, for all I know, but he wasn't out there watching the offensive line play. And that's something I've been noticed because I watch that group pretty closely is oftentimes Emory Jones has been there talking to a coach or just trying to watch how players are going through specific drills so he can get the gist of them, even though he's not going to be doing them probably until training camp. So that was unfortunate. Ben Cleveland, on the other hand, a guy who has missed a practice or been late for a practice or failed a conditioning test in his day, he was in practice. He was in a t-shirt. He was there at practice in a t-shirt, and he was almost like playing an assistant offensive line coach role. He did a couple things in this regard. He was going around and picking up some footballs that were loose on the ground behind the team and kind of securing them. And then they needed somebody to come in and act as an additional defensive player for a rep. And he was just jumping into the role to be an edge defender. I don't think he quite made it in time, but that's okay. And then, you know, he's yelling some encouragement to teammates. And that's very positive. I look at that very positively in terms of Cleveland wanting to do something that will help him stay in this league a little longer. So hopefully he's doing the right thing there. Nate Wiggins was not there. Now here's a big one. And this guy is missing prime time right now. JAD was not there. Now, if you're JAD, you might be playing your next to last season in the NFL. This year's cheap. you know, maybe the Ravens keep him. The Ravens cornerback depth already looks really challenged from where they are. So his chance to make the team has certainly gone up. But on the other hand, the Ravens have an opening at safety. And currently, they have no one in camp to fill that role. And there are snaps on the back end that are going wasted in terms of players who are likely to be on the roster come opening day. We had further development on that end that I'll get to a little bit later, but JAD is missing an opportunity to be here and try and learn that role where he might have a chance. Kyle Hamilton was not there also. Nnamdi Matabike, not there. Broderick Washington, not there. Kyle Van Noy has not been to a practice yet. Jake Hummel, who we learned had a baby at the end of last week, was not there as well. So at least that one is explained absence, whether or not the you feel like he should have been here at some point. Mandatory minicamp. I do expect this entire list of players to be there. By the way, to that end, I'll be recording OTA notes the rest of this week, but I will not happen to be at mandatory minicamp next week. Maureen and I are on vacation, so we're dealing with some stuff and going out to see Bears. And I'll be back for camp. We'll be with my next reports. All right, I spent some time watching the OL drills. They're very fun to watch with Warhop there. Warhop's pace is extremely fast, particularly relative to Joe D. Nothing against Joe D, but he was very old school, got all the footwork right, got all the handwork right, and he really took the time to watch reps individually. Warhop, it's do your rep, boom, 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 go, do your rep, boom, boom, go, and he would go down the line. And today he didn't have a ton of coaching for everybody. Now, I've been noticing that in particular with Carson Vincent in the past, he had a lot of coaching every single rep. We didn't see that today. A little bit of coaching for Penning today, Jared Penning, who's the guard, and who was the other one? Hutchinson got a little bit of coaching, but otherwise it was a pretty rep to rep, moving very quickly. Ronnie Stanley wasn't there, so Joe Noteboom took some of the reps as you would expect on that first team line there. There's a lot of combination block training, and I find this very interesting. And obviously, combination blocks very important for what I score. You make a combination block successfully, meaning you actually help on the level one block and then move up to climb to level two and square up and make a block there. You get a asterisk on the play. It's one of the ways and probably the most common way you can get a highlight block. But that's something that I really like to watch for. He did an interesting thing that I had never noticed before, but he stood behind the offensive linemen and he's looking at the offensive linemen who are acting as defenders on the play. One of them is absorbing the initial double team with his pad. And he doesn't have anything he needs to really cue on from Warhop, but the other one, Warhop is telling him how he wants to move relative to these two gaps. So the linemen get their blocking assignment correct and the right guy peels off and moves up a level. So that was part of the thing. So there's some confusion in terms of how you do it. It's not always on one particular size. It's not just easy peasy there kind of thing. So he did a good job with that. I like watching that drill. I like watching how quickly the offensive line can assimilate to that because their heads are down and they're in their stance when Warhop gives his signal to that extra second level defender on what he's going to be doing on that play. All right, so watch the offensive line for a good bit. The next thing I need to talk about, I don't want to, is the poor quarterback play. It's been terrible without Lamar Jackson there. The accuracy is scattershot. It's ball is going all over the place. There's a lot of low balls that are just they're short of the receiver, but there's even more high balls that are over the receiver's head and just uncatchable. There does seem to be a lot of concern about interceptions, balls thrown out of the end zone in particular. Is something that we've seen. And they're also the other thing I'm seeing a lot is a very antsy nature to the quarterbacks. Now they're not facing a live rush yet. Remember, this is just big brother rush where somebody might walk into the backfield and have a play that might be blown dead, but they're trying to get rid of the ball quickly, I guess, to simulate how the real speed of the NFL game, and they've probably been told to do it that way, but it's creating some terrible accuracy, and it really reduces the quality of the practice. You see those balls just thrown all over the place, and they're rushing, they look like skittish, moving backwards and then throwing off their back foot, and there's no accuracy to be gained there. What else we got? The one really nice pass, there was a long pass from Rush to Isaiah Likely. That was probably the offensive highlight of the day. It was 40 yards down the left sideline. It was over Marlon Humphrey, who got beaten by Isaiah. So that was a nice play I would point to. Very little otherwise in the way of highlights. In fact, we had some interceptions, a couple of interceptions. We had one interception, I guess, only today. But in general, I wouldn't say it was a good day for the quarterbacks at all. The one defender who was really dominant today was TJ Tampa. He looked terrific. And this is really good news, folks, because TJ Tampa has not had a good set of OTAs so far. He's looked a little slow, and he's looked like he might have lost his assignment too, going backwards. So that being the case, it was very nice to have this happen. He intercepted an overthrow for Charlie Kohler. It was about 15 yards between the numbers and the right hash. So it's a wide open space on the right sideline where normally a tight end might like to hunt near the seam there. And he had a pass defense in the end zone on Tez Walker, where he ran with him. And that's good because Tez Walker is very fast. And that is the knock on TJ Tampa, is that he has some second tier speed for a corner. So really good to see TJ Tampa have this. It's actually very similar to the day that Wiggins had the other day. Wiggins had exactly the same thing, an interception, a pass defense in the end zone also, that really made his day. He happened to also be at the podium. So he got the trifecta there. TJ Tampa wasn't at the podium, but had a good day. A couple other 11-on-11 notes I'll throw in there. There were two false starts on the offense. Now, there was a practice last week with 6 false starts, and that was completely unacceptable. So this is a little better, and I'm trying to think if I think 2 false starts is acceptable for one practice. It might be. Some of it depends on if they've gone to any kind of single cadence system, and they hopefully they're not. Hopefully they're still, it might be 1, it might be 2, it might be 3, and so we're going to, you're going to have to hold your water based on whatever you're doing. So that was good. What else we got? Malachi Starks was in position for a pick on the back end in the end zone. He had kind of the back end of that bracket, and this was a case of a ball being thrown very high and far out of the end zone. So well over his head where he could get to it, but he was in position for the overthrow as he was set. So that was good to see. He did have another pass defense on an underneath play. So I think he might have lined up closer to the line of scrimmage, or at least he had underneath responsibility on the play, knocked the ball down. So good to see Starks making some plays here. He was at the podium too, had some interesting things to say about the defense too, and his initial indoctrination to NFL practice that I thought were kind of good. Another guy who looked good was Keaton Mitchell. He showed good burst again, both as a runner and as a receiver. So really nice to see Keaton collect the ball, turn, and get upfield very quickly. Because of his size, possibly, obviously some of it is how quickly he converts the catch into upfield movement. It kind of reminds me of Ray Rice a little bit in that regard. And I think he could be a real receiving threat for the Ravens. So if they want to use him as a flanker and as part of pony packages where he's looking to catch the ball outside, be an extension of the run game. I saw something recently talking about how unsuccessful screen passes have been in the last couple of years. Now they had exceeded 10% of total passes thrown were screen passes, but they really weren't particularly effective in that regard. So I like, with Jackson being such a focal point for this offense, the notion of getting a ball to a back in space is a nice idea. And I think you have a better chance to make a screen pass work for the Baltimore Ravens than you would for the typical NFL team, particularly one who has a statue for a quarterback. You're going to be better off with that combination. All right, let's move on. I got to go back to the safety play and talk about the candidates here, because there's just some things going on that I think the Ravens are in need of pretty much immediate action at the position. Starks, I think, has looked solid. He's been decisive, I think, which is key on the back end. And that's something that I have not really seen from the others, and particularly from Kane and Breed. I don't think they've had the decision-making to figure out in real time where they need to go on a play. There's usually, there might be a false step. It's an instincts position, folks. And it's if you don't have that or don't can't adapt quickly to that, can't process quickly enough, that can often lead you into bad things. So that's been something I've been a little bit disappointed in so far. Kane got caught making one decision late. I saw it really an extended false step, then a move the other way. It was just far too late getting to the play. And then Braid had one. And this was really catastrophic, is probably overstating it until I hear the actual prognosis. We'll talk about it. But he diagnosed late, heading the offensive left sideline, and he collided with Longer Beam. I think it was Longer Beam and not the receiver. Both Longer Beam and the receiver got up, walked back to the huddle, and didn't seem to be impacted by the collision. But Braid immediately pounded his fist on the ground, and he got the attention. He got attention from the trainers while he was lying down right there on the spot. It would have crawled off the sideline a few yards, but it was right on at that particular point of the field. And then he had to leave the field with assistance from a trainer, did not return. We were watching him. It looked like he was putting more weight on that leg as he was leaving the field, but still it did not seem to be a complete trust for the situation. And the immediate pounding often is something that is indicative of a serious injury. So hopefully that's nothing, and Braid will be back at least next week. Let's put it that way for mandatory minicamp. But right now, it certainly did not look good. And the Ravens are at a -2 for safeties. And I already factored into that -2 that I don't think Braid is the guy. Okay, so now one of their optional guys who might have been, you know, one of the guys to fill one of that -2 is probably not going to be that guy, at least to before camp, at the earliest, I would think. So that's very frustrating. And then toss on top of that the fact that JAD didn't even show today. And so if they'd wanted to continue the safety experiment with him, they lost a day to do it. Now, wherever JAD is, hopefully he can get back here and be here for the last 3 days of OTAs, because this is a big opportunity. He's missing it. And maybe he's a little bit dinged up, and that's the problem. That's not a good thing either. I mean, obviously, you know, soft tissue health is very important for players who are trying to win a job this time of year. JAD is notorious for missing lots of camp and preseason games in the past and not having very much total on-field experience. There's already questions about whether or not he can stay on the field well enough to be a reasonable option for the 2025 Ravens in terms of what they need at on the back end in terms of safety play. So, you know, as we get closer and closer, I'm seeing more and more of a cage being built around Kyle Hamilton of having to play the back end more and more, being, you know, part of a too high shell, at least to start on a lot of plays. And it's just not the ideal thing for the Ravens. They want to have the versatility to move him around as needed. And the fact that he wasn't there today doesn't bother me at all, because I know he can play all those positions. But it does bother me that a player like JAD, whatever the reason might be, if it's injury, it's just unfortunate, but it's bad. If it's by choice that he decided not to be there, it's more bad, because it's really him deciding that this opportunity is not important enough to him. The situation with him is very frustrating. All right. So, you know, that left it wide open for the rest of the day for Kane, who was still healthy and able to play at least, and a couple of rookies, Keandre Jackson and Desmond Igbinosen. And I always try to remember, well, the Rutgers guy is Igbinosen, right? Yeah, the Rutgers guy is Igbinosen, and Keandre Jackson is the Illinois State guy. So from Illinois State, Keandre Jackson is making a double jump to get to the NFL level. So he didn't play in Power 4 ball. He didn't even play in what he would have been playing in FCS ball, where he was. So that's, you know, he's got a long way to go. He's back there. He's probably getting as many reps as anybody at this point. And Igbinosen is another guy. Looks more like a strong safety to me from what I can see, you know, and take that for what it's worth. But Igbinosen would be a guy that potentially could be a half field guy, and you would hope for. But I'm just looking across this, you can see hear the frustration in my voice. You can see it is that I don't think the Ravens are set at safety at all, and the Bo Braid injury has just, you know, put the kibosh, I think, on one of the potential options, at least in solving it before camp and figuring out who you have before camp. I think it's much less likely, you know, the Ravens will get there. And, you know, it's it's not just him in terms of being in the, you know, being too late to the ball and whatnot. It's just a set of unfortunate circumstances, and you have to deal with that. So I do expect the Ravens to get a veteran free safety. I think that'd be high on their list. And with a mandatory minicamp coming next week, the signing time might be right. Jair Alexander is up there for, it's been released by the Packers. So he might be a guy the Ravens would go after. And he might actually be a reasonable alternative to bring in as a safety.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Because he's all about the ball skills. 70 PDs in 78 NFL games. That's a fantastic rate. And if he could be that guy, he doesn't even have a super high interception total. I think he's got 12 career interceptions. He'd have 1 year with five. The problem has been he can't stay on the field, can't stay healthy. Three of the last 4 years, he's been hurt. And we had that kind of a situation, I think, with Eddie Jackson. Actually, I think in the Eddie Jackson, it was three of the last four years he was bad. But in the case of Jair Alexander, it's three of the last 4 years he was hurt. Alexander pretty much has kept up his PD rate regardless of how many games he's played, which is somewhat impressive. And I think he would be the kind of guy who would read the quarterback exceptionally well and probably be able to play from the back end. There would be questions about tackling. There always is on a corner to safety conversion. But he might be a guy they would bring in. I know that we're talking about that for Jalen Ramsey. And a lot of people are pretty high on the notion of bringing in Alexander. I don't know if there's any offset language. Boy, would that be something. If there's offset language and it's, you know, whatever you have to pay him, basically the Packers are paying his salary, and you have the ultimate recruiting person in terms of Lamar Jackson. Not only he's the ultimate recruiting person, no matter who you're trying to bring to play for your team, because it's an immediate potential ticket to the Super Bowl. But Jair Alexander played with Lamar Jackson in the same class in the 2018 draft, and in fact was drafted 18th, where Alexander was drafted 18th, where Jackson was drafted 32nd. So, you know, they have a history together, and probably a history of Jair picking up a ball or two and Lamar beating him in practice that they could build on. I'd be very surprised if it's there's no bidding allowed, which is what the case would be if it were offset language in the contract, that it wouldn't end up being the Ravens where Alexander came to. I would be shocked, in fact, if that were not the case. So I'll be interested to see how that develops, and the Ravens could really use him and potentially add safety. Some other highlights from today: Teddy Buchanan came unblocked through the A gap for an apparent sack. He's had a couple good unblocked rushes. He may be doing something to disguise it. I'm not always focused on him, and I did not see on that play whether he was up in the A gap simming pressure anyway, or showing blitz, or whether he came off from off ball. But anyway, unblocked, and that was nice to see. Had a really nice play by Mike Green triggering downhill to tackle Tez Walker, I believe. And I did not see how Walker got the ball. Might have been a short pass to the right, or it might have been a shovel pass or some other reverse, or what it might have been. But it was a play where Green contained the play, diagnosed it, contained it very well, and took him down. So a really nice play by Green. LaJonte Wester, who's made a number of plays at OTA so far, made a nice diving catch. It was about 15 yards between the numbers and the left hash. And I will say there are limits to the catch radius, and LaJonte was out there at the edges of it. So, you know, you have a couple quarterbacks who are really, you know, shooting throwing the football like it's buckshot. It helps to be a receiver who can go and get the football where it needs to be gotten. And I think LaJonte Wester, I hope that's not what the Ravens need him to do, because Lamar Jackson will be throwing the ball, hopefully with a higher degree of accuracy than either we've seen out of Rush or Leary. But Wester does seem to have a catch radius that is larger than what you would expect out of a player his size. So that's been very good to see. Dayton Wade is still with the Ravens, by the way, had a similar nice catch also on the left side of the field. And that was another one that was outside the frame. Chidobe Awuzie, to get back to the trainer's notes here for a second, had his ankle taped midway through practice. He did not return. He was out there on the left side of the field, and some 11-on-11s were going on, and he was stretched out, and the trainer was working on his left ankle and taping it. I may be wrong about that, but anyway, it looked like his left ankle from where I was sitting. And it looked like it was just a stabilization kind of a tape job, but he did not re-enter that I saw. And it's probably always smart to have that be the case. So he didn't go into the clubhouse. He didn't walk away from the field. When he's done with the tape job, he walked back to the sideline as far as I saw. So, you know, I don't know if there's any concern for it, but you know, you don't want to get into a contagious injury situation here when you have one pretty bad one that appeared to occur today. Trenton Simpson had fine coverage of a wheel route by Justice Hill. The ball was well underthrown. One of these ones that was, there's no way he's going to get caught, but Simpson's coverage was really the story on the thing. It's Justice Hill. He's fast. And Trenton Simpson is also reasonably fast, but Hill couldn't shake him on the route. The ball was underthrown. There was another ball in the end zone. I noticed that it's not on my notes of things to talk about here, but it basically was, there was good coverage in the end zone and it hit the leg of the defender. It might've been Keandre Jackson that hit. At least that's my recollection of it in the end zone. And I think, yes, it was. It was Leary's pass hit Keandre Jackson in the back of the leg, covering Isaiah Likely in the end zone. So that one I want to make sure I talked about here, but you just get a sense, hopefully from what I'm talking about, it just how inaccurate the two quarterbacks have been. So that's, you know, thankfully I don't think this is a long-term problem. And you know, Cooper Rush looks maybe a little more professional and ready to go under center. And there are some other things that he seems to be doing at a normal pace, but I'm mildly concerned about what might happen if he had to get into a game for the Ravens. Probably shouldn't be, but that's where I stand right now on June the 9th with some of the inaccuracy that we've seen from the Ravens quarterbacks. All right. And then after practice, saw Wade, Wester, and Keandre Jackson all spending time on the Jugs guy. Now, those guys made some good plays today. Keandre Jackson seemed to be one of the safeties who was actually in the right place. And Wade and Wester made the two best catches of practice, probably in terms of being outside the frame, but those guys were on the Jugs gun, and that's what it takes. I mean, you know, I it can't just be the guys who were dropped an interception and are doing the Jugs gun punitively, which is of course the joke that everybody talks about. The guys who have the good hands are the guys who put time in on it every day. And nice to see that. All right. At the podium, we had three different people. We started with Dennis Johnson, the defensive line coach, and Nick Mehta asked a good question, which he told me he was going to ask beforehand. I said, boy, that's a good one. I'll let you have that one that I had a follow-up for. But he said you had five active for some games and four active for others. Do you feel like you need to have five defensive linemen active for an NFL game these days? And there were problems, of course, last year where the Ravens dressed four and paid the price for it, particularly that Tampa Bay game, where they had injuries occur during the game and they were left extremely shorthanded. I mean, I start screaming as soon as I see an inactives list when there's four defensive linemen that are active because of an inactive defensive lineman. But he did say he'd rather have five. I followed up on that, and that he'd rather have six or seven. And nobody really laughed at that. They should, but it's, you know, it's something that the Ravens have typically rostered only five. You kind of have to have them all ready to go. You have to also have a guy from the practice squad you can bring up when you're only going to go with four. And you know, they've gotten by without it. I asked him if he would like to see fewer snaps from Adebike, who's been up close to the high for Ravens defensive linemen. The Ravens have been a rotational team, so they never push a guy much above between 70 and 75% of snaps. And Adebike was in that range this last year. But the question was, would you like to see his snap count reduced? He said, yeah, he would like to see fewer snaps from Adebike, but that's not where their mind is when they need to close out a game in the fourth quarter, and they're not worried about snap count. But hey, maybe it ought to be the thing you worry about in the third quarter when you worry about how to set up the fourth quarter and defend a lead. And also when you're deciding on whether or not you're going to have five active for that game. Let's see. Gianna asked him about Aeneas Peebles, and he had an interesting thing to say about him. He said he has a really elite get off, probably the best on the defensive line, and that he needs to be, but that he needs to be more technically sound, that they need him to play the run more like the Ravens need him to play the run, is what I take from that. So, by the way, that is said of almost every great penetrator ever. If you're a great penetrator, you almost always are taking chances that force somebody else to make up for your deficiency in covering your own gap. But you hopefully make up for that by getting into the backfield, forcing a bad decision from the running back, possibly getting your hands on the running back and retracking him in some way, even if you don't make a tackle. But you know, the trade-offs are different between having Brent Urban, you know, a great two-gap player who denies space extremely well, is always highly conscious of having the guy next to him make a play, or between a guy like Michael Pierce would be similar in terms of that kind of ability, or between having a penetrator who gets into the backfield, creates havoc, and also can make it easier for somebody else to make a play, but also can get washed and lost in a play, run his way out of a play more likely when you do that kind of when you're that kind of an extreme penetrator. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. He was asked about Travis Jones, and we knew who he's coming to the podium next, and what kind of a leader he'd become this year as well. And he did, I didn't take anything in particular from an answer other than, yeah, he thought that Travis was a better leader this year. Travis got to the podium. And the first thing that strikes you about Travis Jones is he is absolutely ginormous. I mean, bigger than he was last year. And that's really saying something. It carries his weight extremely well. From, you know, he's big in the pants. He's got, you know, he's big glutes and quads. But he doesn't have a huge midsection. He's carrying a little bit of weight there that you would want a nose tackle to carry, but he's not carrying a, you know, Michael Pierce size gut or anything like that. Enormous upper body. And in fact, if you put him next to Ben Cleveland, I mean, he's the one guy on the team who kind of makes Ben Cleveland look a little small. I don't think he's any larger than Ben Cleveland. I just think he looks immensely muscular and really strikes it. There's a picture of him that Jeff Zrebeck took that's on Twitter, and I'm like, this doesn't capture at all how big he is. I mean, the guy is freaking enormous. So anyway, really good to see. He does look bigger at the podium than he did last year to me, and that's really the first thing you notice. I asked him about the synergies that he and Matt Adebike had, because they've been playing basically every one of Jones's snaps is a Matt Adebike snap pretty much in 2024. And for the last half of 23, they played together on the pass rush as that primary pairing. And I'm sure you've heard me talk about this if you've ever listened to the show before. I expect that to continue. Obviously, they need Travis Jones on the field every snap they can get this year. But he says Matt Adebike is his best friend off the field. So I'm trying to go through in my mind. So last year it was Urban and Pierce, and they're both gone, which is a shame. And it was Matt Adebike and Jones. And then I'm wondering, like, what's the friendship that will naturally develop out of a secondary pairing from this year? Is Broderick Washington a natural friend of, say, John Jenkins, perhaps, because they'll be on the field together a lot. But anyway, it'd be interesting to kind of see how some of this plays out. And The other question he was asked was about the contract extension, and that might have been Jeff. I'm not sure. And he said he's not concerned about it, which is the typical player way to answer that and the best way to do it. There's not even any hint of it. It's not like we've heard from some of the players, well, I'd be lying if it wasn't in the back of my mind somewhere. He just says, just trying to have the best year I can, and expects things to work out if they were. I really hope those negotiations have already begun, and just seeing the presence that Travis Jones is after the year he had last year, I hope the Ravens are on top of that one. He'd be at the top of my list of players that they need to re-sign now, even probably above Hamilton, because Hamilton, they can wait a year. And I'm going to go ahead and say it, definitely above Linderbaum. I think he's much more critical to the Ravens' success. And there's no one to replace him. Whereas I think the Ravens, they wouldn't be happy with the options in replacing Linderbaum, and they'd be concerned about the leadership if they had to replace Linderbaum. But if you look at the relative importance of those two, there's that. And I'm not saying Isaiah Likely isn't great. He is. He's a freaking great football player. But if you got Mark Andrews as your consolation prize, I think you're doing okay. It's not a great trade age-wise, and it might not be a great deal dollar-wise to sign Andrews over Likely. But if I'm trying to decide, I can only have one of three of those signings right now. Travis Jones is my guy right now. I want to make sure we get him. So anyway, let's see. Malachi Starks was last to the podium. They asked him about practicing like a professional. Not sure who asked the question, but he gave a good, humble answer. He's very, very good communicator. Very good communicator. I mean, not only can you see that he's done this before a lot at Georgia, but you can see that he's very practiced in terms of how to respond to it and not seem like he's a know-it-all or an idiot or a Yahoo or whatever it might be. I mean, his thing is, his first thing he started off is, I'm not saying I have it all figured out yet, but I've tried to learn how to take care of my teammates. And he's also watching vets for how they handle a situation as it arises. And he mentioned disengaging from a block. And I'm thinking, okay, disengaging from a block, that's more of a football skill than a practice skill. Is that what he really means? And I thought about it a little more. Maybe he does mean that, because when you disengage from a block during practice and you're playing brother-in-law play, that's a time when it can actually escalate, because the other guy may decide he wants to continue trying to look good while you're trying to disengage from a block. So it may actually be a very good example of something you need to learn how to do to practice. But as always, very, very likable podium presence. If you're not in love with Malachi Starks, the football player, and you listen to him talk, it'd be easy to project that all onto the field. Be very simple. He said Isaiah Likely has been the hardest Ravens receiver to cover. That was interesting. Chuck Pagano, he got asked about in terms of his influences upon him. And he said he reminds him of a Georgia defensive coach, a guy named Will Muschamp. I didn't look him up to see exactly what he did, but he's a defensive coach of some sort. And he said, well, Muschamp is more fiery. He'll snap on you in a minute. but Pagano had sent him film from Thursday's practice at 5 a.m. this morning. And that's how he said that's how he wants to be coached. He wants to have somebody like that in his corner. And really nice that Pagano is into it that much at his age. So I'm glad to hear that about him too. And he said, of the players, of the veterans he's looking at, that Roquan Smith has probably done the most to give him a new perspective with the way he handles his business. He talked about Roquan a couple different ways. We don't hear too, I mean, we've heard from Roquan certainly at the podium, but he said he's extremely smart. And, you know, he handles his business and practices the right way. And it's good to see him. And you know, part of the question came up, well, is that because he's from Georgia or whatnot? He goes, you know, I never saw him play when he was at Georgia. In fact, he didn't go to his first Georgia game until he got recruited there. But then he did see tape of his while he was at Georgia. They had old Roquan Smith film that they showed him, obviously, at some point, and he'd seen it there. But clearly impressed with him as a professional as well. So that's good to hear. And it's good to hear Roquan. You know, we don't hear too much about Roquan. When we do hear something about Roquan, it's usually about, oh, his coverage isn't this or it isn't that, or, you know, kind of thing. And people are focusing on some negative about him when there's a whole host of positives. And further than that, I mean, Roquan fills in for what other players cannot do. In a lot of ways, he's like CJ Mosley in that regard, a guy who was forced into coverage roles where, you know, it might not have been ideal, but he was the best option the Ravens had in terms of doing that. And he was also a guy, because the Ravens had good coverage players all around him when he was there, that got picked on a little bit in those circumstances. And that shouldn't have been unexpected either. But anyway, it's really nice to hear about Roquan in those terms from another player. Okay, that's going to do it for today. Thanks for joining me. We'll have OTA notes again tomorrow, and I hope you look for those. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. As always, if you're watching on YouTube, please like and subscribe. We're trying to build that that subscriber number a little bit. We have not focused on it at all to date. And if you've got time and you want to promote the show in some way, either tell somebody about it or please write us a 50-word, 5-star review, and I'd be greatly appreciated. Talk to you next time on Film Study.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
You have 5 new messages. Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week? Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.